This is the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I'm a big star, you know.
Listen live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.
Good morning, DCR.
Got the number one pick and a Super Bowl champ with the man they can't seem to stump. Do something dumb, that's an observation. CLT make him need to run.
That's Lawrence Taylor!
Call him every trash, DMT for short. Wonder if we best, why don't you peep the score? Sports Center Reed, gonna be top stories of the morning. While you're yawning, grab your coffee, rise and shine with 98.7. This is Drive Time, we provide highlights from your favorite teams. Dave, Chris, and Rick making plenty of picks. It's Rule 76.
All right now. I dislike the Wednesday, but I adore the Friday, February 26, 2021. Welcome aboard, and we welcome back one Chris Canty. And I loved what you said yesterday on Get Up, Chris. It was wonderful because they were talking about the draft. And do you agree with Orlovsky? And do you agree with Mel Kiper? And you go, absolutely not. And you went right after them, right after those guys yesterday.
Well, I mean, I kind of had to, Dave. Everybody's talking about what the Jets should do at the number two spot. And listen, guys, as much as we believe in Sam Darnold's ability, I just think he needs a fresh start. I think the organization needs a reset. It makes sense financially. Yeah, I have enough reasons why the Jets shouldn't pass on the opportunity to take a quarterback at two if they can't trade for a quarterback in the marketplace. But you already heard me say that, so it is what it is.
I loved it, though. Rick, I loved watching him get aggressive on Get Up yesterday.
Yeah, he had to feel good because you think the same thing. I mean, I don't even know what you would have done, Guff, but you were on the show, too. Yeah, Canty saying no. Then they came to Dave Rothenberg, and he's got them trading down from 2 to 4 and taking a tight end of 4.
You can't love that. We'll get into that a little bit later. Now, you know what? And I feel badly. Because I feel like, you know, as a show, we're pretty connected. I'm hearing about injuries for you now. You hurt again?
No. I had a little knee thing going on.
But I didn't know anything about that.
Well, I don't want to complain about it.
Well, you obviously did to RJ because he's all concerned about the knee.
No, I didn't even realize this because you can't shut the microphone off. And I must have been moaning or grunting during one of the breaks. And he's like, what's up, buddy? What's going on with you? And I said, my knee. I just left knee's all banged up. So I don't know if
I can. So there was no way for me to have known then.
No.
So I'm not a bad friend.
No, exactly right. You're a good friend. You're a great friend. There's nothing you could do about it.
I just want to be sure.
Just
want to be sure that this wasn't something that I missed, that you had told everyone that your knee's bothering you, and now I had no idea. Now
do you know how difficult it is to bite off a kneecap?
it's very difficult. It's not very easy. By the way, and it's at this point, it's disgusting, and we'll get to the NBA in a second. I'm watching the K show. I can't even watch the K show anymore. Like it's so unsettling because somebody calls and says, Peter, you look great. You look as good as DiPietro. And then they start, oh, he's so handsome. Oh, he's so good looking. Oh, and Michael starts slobbering all over you. Oh, what a gorgeous man. I mean, it's ridiculous at this point.
I don't understand why you're so jealous of the relationship.
I'm not jealous. I'm disgusted by it.
Well, listen, you're going to have to suck it up because it ain't going anywhere. It's only getting stronger.
Mm.
The love is only growing. Long conversations, text messages. I mean, it's a beautiful thing, Dave.
I mean, you have something special with Michael. Because I don't know about you, Chris, but I haven't spoken to him. And I, to be honest with you, I couldn't tell you the last time I actually spoke with Michael Kay.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've heard from the Kays. The last time I was on the show was the weekend of the Super Bowl. But it's been a minute. But, I mean, with Ricky, it's an everyday thing. That's a part of Michael's daily routine.
Are you in touch? Is there a day that goes by, including weekends, that you're not in touch with Kay?
Is there a day go by? I would say probably out of the 7 days of a week, I probably touch base with him at least 5 of the 7 days.
At least five?
At least
daily.
Five, yeah.
Daily, Dave.
Yeah, it's daily. I mean, it's either text. Sometimes we'll call each other. You know, just how's things going? How's the kids? You know, stuff like that. You know, just when you find
remarkable.
Your person. You know, Dave, when you find your person. Yeah, I mean, you want to know how they're doing every day just to make sure, just double checking.
No, it's lovely. It really is. But then I have to end up, oh, he's so good looking. Oh, yeah. it's so unsettling. That's the best word I can think of to use. It's just, it's uncomfortable, it's unsettling, and it's unnecessary.
Dave, as uncomfortable as hearing one grown man call another grown man delicious.
Yeah, but that was one time, right? It was one time. and maybe it was a mistake. I felt that way at the moment. But it's not like every day I'm saying it over and over and over. I mean, the love that Kay has for Rick for no reason. For no reason.
Which is disrespectful to say that. I mean, what do you mean for no reason? Like,
well,
I have
why does he
I
love
have
you?
No qualities?
I mean, Don goes through it all the time. It's like you guys are nowhere near an age. He doesn't even like hockey. There's absolutely no reason that he, in fact, has this man crush on you.
Do you like everything your wife likes?
No.
Everything your good friends like? No, you don't. There's just a common ground. You just like the person. You can't explain it. You just like being around the person. Just, I mean, we have good conversations.
It flows. It's flowing conversation.
It's flowing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can tell he's listening. I mean, that's a sign of a good relationship. I know when I say something, like when we're talking, like when he asked me a question, because he's inquisitive like that, he's actually listening.
He's inquisitive. Look at you. He's inquisitive. You're unbelievable. Like, it would be strange if you got onto the phone with the guy and there wasn't questions, wouldn't it?
No. Have you? Okay, maybe this is why I love Kay so much, is in my most recent experience, like trying to have conversations with younger people is almost impossible.
This is amazing. Younger people, look at you. You're panhandling to him.
No, I'm not. People have
younger
lost
people. He's experienced. He has life experience. He is Michael Kay. He gets me, the depth of me. He asks the right questions. This is amazing.
Yeah, but it's no different. I love spending time with my father-in-law too. I mean, he's way older than I am. But we both like to golf.
Who's older, your father-in-law or Kay?
My father-in-law's older than Kay. Have you ever had don't even lie. Have you had a conversation with like a younger person lately that was a good conversation?
Yes.
No, that's a fault. They don't know how to communicate no more.
Wow.
So you're not only do you love Kay, but you're going to soil the entire generation that's yours and younger?
Yeah, they don't know how to conversate, man. They don't. It's like they just sit there. Like they want to just text message. They can't. I can't pick up the phone and have a conversation. Doesn't go anywhere.
Rico, are you basing this off of your interactions with your kids that you're coaching over at Portland? Because that would be different.
Well, no. I mean that. Like trying to have a conversation with. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm just an old soul, you know.
Yeah. Well, you found your other half in the great Michael Kay. So congratulations to you for that. He's so good looking. I'm ridiculous. All right. Speaking of good looking, the Knicks were good looking last night. That's a game, baby. I'm just excited for you guys to say, you know what, Dave? Maybe you're right. You know what, Dave? Maybe this is a team that's going to wind up in a special spot, because last night offensively, Chris, that was some kind of performance.
No, that was a great offensive performance. It helps that you're going up against the worst defense in the entire NBA. But, I mean, look, the Knicks took advantage of it. They shot 65% from the field, Dave, and 52% from three-point range. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, you're talking about that was just in the first half, and then having the opportunity to have 19 three-point makes. Like, I was impressed by their performance. I really was. And I think it was a good move for Thibodeau to put Derrick Rose in the starting lineup, because that gives you somebody that can create and makes offense a lot easier for everybody in that lineup. And then it gives quickly the opportunity to take control of that second unit, and that's exactly what he did. I mean, you're talking about 18 points in the first half and 25 on the night. Like, I was impressed by that performance by the Knicks. They dominated that team, especially in the second half of that ball game, and they didn't allow the Kings to make it even close when it got to the fourth quarter.
And you had a Frank sighting. I mean, he had everything last night.
And early last night, too.
He's good defensively. He really is. I mean,
he is.
I'll be interested to see what happens moving forward. Like, Alfred Payton's been good. But, I mean, yeah, Derrick Rose, just how he set the tone early, how aggressive he was. We had 11 points in that first quarter, and then all of a sudden, you saw what happened when Alec Burks kind of went back to his Oof. Natural position.
It was red hot.
In the fourth, he was ridiculous.
What, he had 5 threes in the fourth last night?
Mm-hmm.
18 points in the 19 points in the fourth quarter. Yeah, I mean, that was, listen, in the here was my takeaway from last night, and we talked about this yesterday, Dave, is we started bringing up Bradley Beal, and we had a bunch of people that called in and say, no, let this thing bake, you know, take your time. We like to be young, and we like to have draft picks. And we said, like, you'll get a good look tonight what a team that has a bunch of young talent,
yep,
that has that mindset looks like.
Because look at what they have. De'Aaron Fox is a top pick, right? Harrison Barnes is a top selection. Bagley's a top selection. And you watch them, and it's like, this is a team that's going absolutely nowhere. Now, they're young and they're talented, but they're not going anywhere now.
Nowhere. I mean, where they're going is but Luke Walton is going to get fired at some point.
That's where they're going.
That's where they're going.
The shine is worn off on Luke Walton a little bit. But, I mean, that's the part that makes me trust what the Knicks are doing right now, Dave, just because you have a real head coach. Like, Thibodeau is respected in NBA circles. Like, you don't have a question mark at the head coaching position right now. So what we're seeing, I don't think this is an aberration. I think this is who the Knicks are going to be. They have a solid foundation. And so as we move into the second half of this season, get on the other side of the All-Star break, I think you're only going to see this team continue to grow, continue to mature. And that's something that bodes well for the young players because ultimately this season is about their development.
It certainly is. And you could tell that this team likes to play together. I mean, you watch the bench and there's a big play. And in fact, I was watching the game with Alex last night. He's like, why are they going so crazy on the bench when someone makes a play? I'm like, because that's a team that cares. And here's Julius Randle commenting on just that after the game last night.
It's amazing. Everybody, you know, really enjoys each other, enjoys hanging out on and off the court. We enjoy playing with each other, playing for each other, making plays, and helping each other out. So from top to bottom, whether it's, you know, the veteran, older guys, you know, our younger guys like Obi and Quick, everybody works extremely hard, and we're a close, tight-knit group.
And there, I'll tell you, and you know, RJ and Ray say to me before the show, you keep saying that, but it's true, and it's been so long since I've been able to. They're fun. Like, watching the Knicks is an enjoyable experience. It's not, I work in sports talk radio, so it's an obligation. It's, I'm a Knicks fan, and it's actually fun at this moment to watch them play basketball.
You actually get excited to turn the TV on.
Yeah.
And I mean, to what Julius Randle said, I mean, it's like, you know, Taj Gibson hits a three, the bench goes crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And my boy Theo Pinson leading the charge. It's, I mean, this is when you know something special is starting to happen with a group. When you see how much they care for each other. Because that's important. And Thibs has said, I mean, they asked him, you know, I don't know if it was last game or the game before, you know, about the young guys and what they're looking for. And he said, we have a specific guy we're looking for. Like, we want guys that enjoy being in the building. We want gym rats. And that's, I mean, this team has bought into what he sold. And, I mean, even when they don't play well, like, I mean, quickly struggled over the last couple games.
Yep,
and
he has.
For him to come out last night, because you know he's working his butt off behind the scenes and have the kind of game that he had, I mean, that's all good. I mean, it is, because this team, it's at some point, you know, once they do, you know, start to add a little bit more talent outside of just Julius Randle, I mean, the foundation is being set.
Yeah, I think it comes down to the team trusting the process, right? And I know that's a term coined by the Philadelphia 76ers, but I mean, in terms of watching them play every single night, even if they don't get the results that they're looking for, you don't see this team panic. You don't see the young players panic. And I think that's a product of the coaching staff and the messaging that's sent from Thibodeau to the guys in that locker room. Like, I mean, this is one of those situations where you look at it and you say, yeah, this is a team that plays with a lot of confidence because their head coach gives them the blueprint to success each and every night versus each and every opponent. And it's something that they believe in.
Yeah, and they're fun to watch. And the one takeaway that I have, and Rick, I know this bothers you tremendously as well, and I'm sure there are people listening going, all right, you guys mention this all the time, but you know what? I can't help it. Halliburton is going to be a heck of a player, and I have tremendous reservations about what in fact, Obi Toppin will become.
Yeah, Halliburton's legit, man.
He's a good player.
Yeah, but I mean, he's just his whole game. I mean, defensively, he's really good. And we said at the time, I mean, that's what the Knicks needed. I mean, the Knicks needed, they haven't had one for how long? Now, quickly stepped up, but no one expected Emmanuel quickly to be what he is now.
But that's how you have to look at this thing, though, don't you? I mean, you can't just look at it as, oh, it's Halliburton versus Obi Toppin. I mean, you have to look at it as, okay, do you like Halliburton or do you like the combination of what the Knicks got in quickly and Toppin?
But why does it have to be either or? Why couldn't I have Halliburton and quickly? It's not like if the Knicks would have taken two point guards or two guards that you'd say, oh, how could they do that? That's just so ridiculous.
No, but I think they wanted to address multiple positions. They wanted to look at front court help, and they also wanted to get somebody that could be the point guard of the future. Because let's keep in mind, we didn't think that Julius Randle was going to have the season
True.
That he's having right
You're
now.
Correct.
Like, they didn't
that
know
correct.
That. So, I mean, they took a guy that they thought had the potential upside. And, you know, we'll see what happens with Obi Toppin. But, I mean, as far as quickly goes, last night I thought it was his time to kind of make a statement to the NBA because you could tell he was aggressive early on in that game. I mean, being able to draw fouls, draw contact. He had the four-point play at the end of the first quarter. Like, it was clear to me, like, quickly wanted to go out there and make a statement against this particular opponent, and I think it absolutely had to do with some of the hype around Tyrese Halliburton.
Now, I look forward to the game where Obi Toppin says, you know what, I'm going to make a big statement against this opponent. Look out.
Easy, Dave. Come on.
Here I am, world.
Give the kid a break. Listen, he's gotten off to a really slow start. He had some injuries early on. We'll see what he can become.
You're right.
We'll see.
It's very, very early on. But watching Halliburton play like that is a tad frustrating, I know, for the Knicks fan.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
You're absolutely right.
Catch the show on demand wherever and whenever you want. Just subscribe to us, rate us, and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
I sense it's much like a fine bottle of wine. Just let it breathe. You don't just pour it and drink it. You have to experience the music. Get yourself back and ready for the show.
Nice parallel, Dave. You're absolutely right. I was listening to that this yesterday morning on my way in to the Seaport, and I heard you guys playing a little bit Justin Bieber. I was like, do I have the right station? And I heard you guys' voices talking. I was like, look at Dave letting it breathe, come back from break.
You got to let it breathe. And I think that's been an issue, and I think that's going to be remedied
now. Early risers will get work.
I didn't realize you were a big Bieber fan, Dave.
I like Justin Bieber.
Okay.
Super talented. Justin Bieber, super talented. Speaking of good music, too, have you guys heard the Post Malone cover?
No.
Of Hootie and the Blowfish Only Want to Be With You?
No.
No.
I'm telling you, it's good. It's really. We'll play it coming after the segment. Coming up from next break, we'll play it. It's good.
Okay.
Really
and
good.
We'll spend minutes on it.
Yeah, we'll decant it.
Yeah. Yes.
Like a nice cab.
Yes. We'll take a waft of the aroma.
You should have seen, speaking of, like, you're supposed to decant good wine. So my rookie dinner, I got stuck with two rookie dinners in the same year.
Oof.
So I had one in Chicago when I was playing for the Wolves, and I was the only rookie. And then when I got called up, I had my rookie dinner with the Islanders in Dallas. And, I mean, it just got wild. I mean, they're ordering crazy bottles of wine and everything else. I ended up getting so banged up, I just grabbed one of the bottles of wine off the table and just started drinking it out of the bottle.
You were going to need that when the bill came.
See, I thought the waiter was going to fight me. He was so disgusted that I was
that
drinking
someone
this
would do something like that to a fine bottle of wine.
Exactly right. He's like, "What are you doing? That bottle needs to breathe." I was like, "Trust me, I'm not. I have at
you've
this
had
point
64 drinks. You're at with a bunch of Neanderthals, and he thinks that your thought's going to be that the bottle of Cabernet
exactly
needs to
right.
breathe before."
I'm just hoping that
Rick is breathing when they bring the check. That's what I'm hoping.
Yes. I respect that, though. I respect the fact that this is a guy that knows that he could get his butt walloped at the drop of a hat by a full hockey team, and yet he's just like, the wine needs to breathe before you enjoy it. What's the matter with you, son?
How dare you disrespect this vintage?
Oh, my God. It's like California.
What was the damage, Rico, on the rookie dinner?
I paid... What did I pay my dinner? 12 maybe?
Okay, that's not
12,000?
Bad.
12,000?
That's not bad.
How much?
12,000.
That's
probably?
Not bad. That's not bad, Dave. That's not bad.
All right, we need to take a step back. The fact that you spent 12,000 and the fact that you say, "Oh, 12,000. Oh, that's not bad. $12,000 on a meal?"
Dave, Dez Bryant had to pay 50 grand.
Depends
50
on how many rookies
grand.
Have.
Is it who's the one that just refused?
That was Dez Bryant.
That was dead. He said, "Just said I'm not paying."
It was 50 grand. Like my year, I was lucky. We had to pay 35,000, but it was split.
Yep.
Four ways because we had four defensive rookies. So keep in mind, Dave, we spent 35 grand, and this is just to take the defense out. So it was me, Marcus Spears, Jay Ratliff, and DeMarcus Ware.
And that's just what? That's like a rite of passage? Like every young rookie has to do that?
You have to do it, yeah. Yeah, you have to do it.
But you got some
it.
Bad guys, though. There are some guys that take full advantage. Like, there's some. If you got bad vets, like, there'll be times, too, like, if you got bad guys that'll order, like, cases of wine to take home with them.
That seems awful, honestly.
Yeah. I think you draw the line where it's like, okay, if you want to take something home, like a dessert home or a steak home, okay, that's one thing. But when you start ordering cases of stuff, that's all bad.
Now, you were a fourth-round pick, Chris?
Fourth-round pick. The last pick in the fourth round.
So, how does it work? Like, if you're a first-round pick or you're a fourth-round pick, you're still putting in the same amount of money?
Yes. That's what happened in my case. Now, what it should be is tiered. Like, the guys that are drafted higher should pay more because they get more money. But in our situation, the vets just, they said, listen, you guys can split that. That's not that big of a deal.
$35,000.
I'm spending an entire game check on a rookie dinner.
Now, how does that work? Does cash become involved, or that's a credit card vehicle?
Who's carrying around that kind of cash?
Who's spending $35,000 on dinner? I don't. This is a world beyond what I know.
We not strippers. What are you talking about?
This is a world beyond what.
Yeah,
I mean,
you're talking to the guy who pays $100 a pass with this guy who plows his driveway.
I don't give him cash.
You're right.
And you're gonna compare that. Like, that's a necessity of life. I need to be able to get in and out of my
home. No choice.
To be able to drive over the driveway. Yes, I don't want the double pile. $1,000 on a dinner.
But we have no choice. There's no choice. Like, I mean, you can't, like, you're only going to make your life miserable if you don't pretend like you're enjoying. Well, you're going to enjoy it because it's an awesome night. But you just keep your mouth shut. You give them a credit card, and then you try to write it off at the end of the year.
Yeah, but that stuff comes back to you, though, right, Rico?
100%.
Like, my vets, like, they bought us suits. Like, they took care of, like, massage therapists, like, you know, like those sports doctors appointments. Like, I had good vets. Like, that's how it typically should work. Like, you'll end up getting it back in the end, Dave. But, I mean, to Rick's point, every now and again you get a bad group of veterans, and it's just like they're just trying to take advantage of the rookies. They typically play on the bad teams, though.
Dave, we had a dinner in Miami. It was Miami. So we had the whole restaurant. So we just said to the person, we said, hey, listen, just let us know when it gets to a certain point because we got to shut this thing down because we don't want guys to get too crazy. So night starts off, guys are
like financially when it gets to a certain point, or when you guys actually cross the point where it's become crazy?
No, it was already grabbed by the
kind
time
of one and the same.
Yeah, I mean, by the time you walk in the door, you're already lit up. So it's going to be a great night because there's usually a day off following it. So we said, hey, just because we don't want to crush the rookies, let us know when it gets to a certain amount of money because we feel comfortable with them, you know, splitting this amount of money. So guys get in there, they're ordering like Magnums, a Cristal. I got one guy walking around with like beluga caviar in his back pocket, like it's
juggling caviar over on the side.
No, like it's a tin of dip, and he's walking around like packing up. He's like, you want some of this? I'm like, what is that? He's like, oh, it's caviar, and he's like packing it like it's dip. I'm like, no, I don't want any caviar out of your pocket. 10 o'clock at night, we haven't even had. I mean, we're not even finished with dinner yet.
You've reached the number,
Dave. She goes, I just want to let you know. This thing's getting out of control. I said, well, what's the damage? She goes, right now we're at $66,000.
Oh, my God.
I said, excuse me?
The restaurant sees you guys walking in, they're probably doing backflips in the back.
Oh, I mean, they know going in. As soon as you say what it's for.
Yep.
We're like, yeah, we got 20-something guys coming in. We're going to have a rookie dinner.
A team dinner for an NHL club.
Oh, yeah. It's a great night. You'll never forget those nights.
No, it's awesome. It's awesome.
All right. Let's get back to the NBA. Guys, the Nets, and we've talked about this. There's not that many more things to check off with this team, right? Can they play defensively decently? Well, it seems like that's happening. Can they coexist? Seems like that's happening. Can they beat the big teams? Seems like that's happening. Can they beat the big teams on the road? Check that off the list. Can they beat the teams that aren't very good and raise the level of their motivation against the lesser teams around the NBA? And feels like we're checking that off the list now. I don't know what more there is to check off the list with this team at this point.
Yeah, Dave, the only thing we're waiting on is can we go through a post-game press conference and actually understand what Kyrie Irving is saying? That's about the only thing that's left to check off on the Nets. I mean, this team is playing really well, man. I mean, all the questions that we had about it once they made the James Harden trade, are they going to be able to develop enough depth that they can trust once they get to the postseason? Looks like they're checking that box. I mean, are they going to be able to have enough guys to support the big three? Yeah, looks like they'll be fine. How are they going to play without Kevin Durant? Looks like they're pretty good. I mean, what's this? Is a 9-game winning streak? I mean, this team is showing you like there are not many weaknesses, and they're getting better at the things that we had question marks about. I mean, last night's game really wasn't competitive after the first quarter. It really wasn't. So, I mean, when you start looking at the Nets, there really isn't a whole lot of holes to poke in their game. And based on the trajectory, this team is going to be in the NBA Finals.
I mean, thought early on in that game, too. I mean, first six minutes.
They were terrible.
They were awful. Yep. I mean, they had 5 points in the first 6 minutes. And then they turn around in the last 18 minutes of the first half and score 60 points. I mean, the second quarter was insane. The offensive explosion in the second quarter.
Yeah, they bludgeoned them.
But that's what makes them so dangerous. If they at some point, and you saw it last night, when they say, okay, enough is enough, and they ramp up the intensity on defense, create some turnovers and everything else, they put so much pressure on you because at one point they hit 9 straight shots. Like, you're just trying to keep up. If they string together stops with how good they are offensively, I mean, before you know it, the game's getting away from you. I mean, it's going to be, I mean, this team, once Kevin Durant comes back, I actually thought what was important last night, too, is, and we said this when they traded Jared Allen, and he was hurt at the time. Like, you know, big bodies that could potentially step up.
Mm-hmm.
And we heard how much they like Nicholas Claxton.
Yep.
Because he's a good defender and how athletic he is. I mean, he could end up being an important piece for them moving forward with his ability to defend. Because he's a big body and he's really athletic.
Yeah, I mean, he played well last night. What, he was plus 16 in 15 minutes. So, I mean, he played well. But I don't know how much burn he's going to get once we get past the trade deadline with the buyout market and all that stuff. Because I still think they're going to be in the marketplace for another big. I still see that. Now, can he develop a role and be a part of it in the second half of the season? We'll see. But I don't think they're going into the second half thinking, you know what, Nicholas Claxton, he's the guy that we feel like.
No, I'm not saying he's the guy, but I mean, yeah. What are you going up against? I'm just saying, you know, these teams that you're going to be head-to-head with trying to get to the NBA Finals,
yep,
with Giannis and Embiid, I mean, the more big bodies you can throw at these guys.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
The better off you are.
When is Durant coming back? Do we have a timetable on that?
I think this weekend. He's supposed to come back before the All-Star break.
He's supposed to be back before the All-Star break, right?
But why would you rush him back at this point?
I mean, it's terrifying to think of what it could look like when he comes back. I mean, they don't lose when he's not there against good teams.
Yeah, but again, I mean, offensively, what they're able to do, I mean, I just don't, like, even when they play good defensive teams, I mean, it's, you know, you can't stop them.
You can't.
It's like you pick.
The Clippers, without Durant, the Clippers couldn't come close to stopping them. You can't stop them.
Especially when Joe Harris is hitting shots. I mean, it's just...
And then you get Bruce Brown.
Those three draw so much attention. And, I mean, James Harden, his ability to pass. It's funny because you watch him play, and me and I know Dave, like watching sometimes, as good as Julius Randle is, sometimes when he dribbles himself into the double team, mm-hmm, and gets trapped and can't pass out of it. Like, they try to trap James Harden, and he passes out of it. And you got all day to make shots.
Yeah. They really are incredible offensively, and they're getting better defensively, too. Now, we all appreciate Kyrie Irving and the things that he has to say, because sometimes you think he's a little crazy. And then sometimes you hear him, and you're like, boy, what? He's the gift that keeps on giving with the stuff that he says. Last night is a doozy.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I don't wake up at 4 a.m. to wear a swim shirt.
Looking for more access to the show? Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at DCR on ESPN.
I just heard an incredible story about RJ Santillo, which I think Rick will wow you and amaze you more than Chris or I. So he went to a museum, I don't know, in the last year or so, or maybe beyond that because we've been locked down. And he's there at the museum, and a piece of artwork strikes his fancy and strikes his eye. Guess what he does?
He buys it.
He touches it.
No.
He starts petting the artwork. And people he didn't even realize were now security at the museums jump out of the woodwork, and they're like, what are you doing? And they say, if you do that again, we will physically remove you from the museum.
And that's just a polite way of them saying we're going to bounce you out on your head.
Yeah.
Bueller. Oh. Bueller.
I'm going to drag you out of there.
You can't touch the artwork.
You can't touch the artwork.
Is that like it's like Fight Club. It's the first rule of the museum. You don't touch the pieces of art.
That's how good the art was for him, though. It hit him on a different level where he didn't even care if he got in trouble. He needed to touch it, feel it, texture of it.
What went through your mind that you started petting the artwork?
You can't touch him, man. You just cannot touch him.
I don't know what the art piece was, but it had a bunch of nails sticking out of it. And I said to myself, those can't be real nails. That's dangerous. So I thought I was in the clear. And I kind of poked it, and it didn't work out. And they got very upset. And I understand why. It's one of those things where you know you did something wrong. And I said, well, you do what you got to do, Mr. Security Man. If I got to go, I got to go.
Now, this is one of the big museums. This is not like some little small dumpy museum in the corner of Brooklyn.
This is here in the fine borough of Manhattan, one of the big ones.
You're like the Whitney, and you're touching stuff.
But here's the thing, though. It's not Starry Night. Like, if you yell at LeBron, you know, back a couple weeks ago, and that woman gets kicked out, I understand why. You yell at the 15th guy on the bench, I think you get a little more leeway. No one knew. I don't know what this was.
You can't start poking the 15th guy on the bench,
I think if you asked the artist, they would be humbled that I was so intrigued by the piece that I felt a way about it.
Yeah, I don't see it the same way. I don't think if you ask the artist, I don't think that they would find it to be humorous that you were poking.
Stop touching me there.
I don't think that'd be funny. All right. What is funny is hearing Kyrie Irving just speak really at this point. Let's take a listen. You're going to enjoy this. We'll take a listen. We'll break it down if that kind of thing is possible. Here is Kyrie after the game last night.
Well, one, I think, you know, there were a lot of people speaking for me or speaking on my behalf that really don't, or really didn't know who I was. And I didn't offer that access to a lot of people because it's just the trust. You know, it's just leaks here, somebody saying this here in Cleveland and in Boston. And I'm not going to sit here and talk about Cleveland and Boston because I know what that goes, where that goes and where that can go in terms of who you're talking about, what you're talking about. So I'll just generalize it. What I learned from those experiences was if you're not enjoying the journey, you're not committed the way that you would like to be committed. And I mean, every day, you know, even when you're tired, even when you're having good days, bad days, and, you know, you got to be able to galvanize the group even when it's low and even when it's high. It's just the balance of leadership, you know, and there isn't one leader, you know, and I've had to accept that too. It's not on me to lead the group by myself and be the hero that everybody wants to, because that's what America is. That's what this world is. They love to build you up, love to tear you right down. I'm great to be in my, I'm grateful to be in this position to be able to set a better example now than I did then. And I take accountability for, you know, not necessarily stepping up to the plate or stepping up to the responsibility for my own actions. You know, I had a lot to do with the success and failures of the teams that I was on. I take, you know, my role very serious in terms of that. And I've been able to learn lessons from that to give to others. That's been the most beautiful part, is just to learn. That's the growth. So I'm just more excited about that than anything. And it's been able to translate here with the guys that are here. And, you know, it's always been bigger than the game for me, is what I'm saying. So leadership now is just about having fun and giving those guys the energy, galvanize the group.
Do you think the teammates, coaching staff hears that and thinks to themselves, what are you talking about? Like, where did this even come from? And what are you talking about?
I think at this point you just embrace it. I mean, yeah, what other choice do you have? You don't. I mean, I will say the one thing I do agree with is that, you know, you do like to build people up and then tear them down. But outside of that, with the whole, you know, leadership thing, being accountable, I mean, it's the same guy that went AWOL. And the two teams he's talking about in Cleveland and Boston, without LeBron James, Kyrie, Cleveland, the team was awful.
Terrible.
Awful.
And he doesn't want to be hero over
and
over?
And Boston, the Boston team was actually better without him. He's desperate to be considered a leader, and the reality is he's not. I don't think he's capable of being
even more so, Chris. Don't you feel like you have to treat this guy with kid gloves? Like like one of the few things that could derail this team is if something happens off the court and Kyrie Irving kind of loses his composure and goes missing or something happens.
I mean, you do worry about that, Dave. But I think his teammates understand. Like Kyrie Irving, he's going to say some things that you're not going to quite be on board with. But when it comes to playing basketball and getting in between those lines,
he's
like
great.
Kyrie Irving is a really special talent. Like, the guy can get to the rim at will. He's the best ball handler in the world, and he's a prolific scorer. And quite frankly, I like him in this role as an off guard as opposed to being a point guard, because I think James Harden is better at setting the table for others than Kyrie is. So, I mean, I think this role that they're going to have him in is perfect. And so now it's just about making sure that you minimize the distractions and know that in the post-game press conference, he's going to say some things that make you scratch your head. But I don't think the guys in that locker room pay a lot of attention to it.
Dave, listen, if Pedro Serrano is hitting bombs.
Yep, that's all that matters.
He can take my head cover, bat and hats for bats, Joe Boo, whatever he wants to do. He can do it.
But that's why tolerate him.
Yeah.
Because what he's able and capable of giving you night in and night out is sensational.
I have to wake up back.
And you have to coddle him. And you have to be like, all right, you know, we'll play the game, fine. You listen to him, fine. But at the end of the day, he's just a different kind of guy.
But here's what I didn't understand about his comment, Dave. He was talking about you're not able to be committed the way you want to be. I mean, I don't understand. Like, if you're committed to playing for a team, I mean, you have to be all in, don't you?
I don't think he is, though.
But, I mean, I know he's talking about his situation in Cleveland. He's talking about the situation in Boston. But conditional commitment ain't commitment at all. That's, like, I don't get why he was saying I wasn't able to be committed in those situations the way that I wanted to be. That doesn't make sense.
I don't think he looks at basketball as his number one priority.
Hmm. Clearly he does not, as a matter of fact.
So when he's talking about commitment, he's talking about off-the-court things?
Yeah, I think when he went AWOL, I think because that was partly because of obviously what was going on in the world and everything else, but that was for him. I mean, he always says, you know, there are things that are bigger than basketball.
Mm-hmm.
That's how he views it.
It's so cryptic, man. It's so cryptic. Like, you just can't understand it. Like, if it's about something that's bigger than basketball, then I wish he'd just come out and say that.
But he doesn't. And that's what makes it even more frustrating. He does it with this, like, hidden message.
But doesn't that defeat the purpose, Dave?
I think so. And that's why you take it with a grain of salt. It's like, all right, Kyrie said something. It might have been important. It might have been something I just don't understand. And away we go. Like, that's where we are with him right now.
But here's what I don't understand, though. He always keeps going back to, too. Like, I don't want to, like, I'm, you know, I protect myself. And I don't want, because, you know, I don't want things to be misinterpreted and with leaks and everything else. Well, how else are you supposed to interpret when, you know, this is, you know, finally I have someone I feel comfortable taking the last shot. Well, I mean, that's a shot at LeBron James. How else would you let me interpret that?
Oh, of course it is. LeBron James is living rent-free in Kyrie Irving's head. There's no question about it.
Well, the other night, where he's like, when they played the Lakers, this is your best free throw shooter? What would you like me to take from that? Other than you throwing shade at LeBron James.
Yeah, that's what he does all the time. All right, let's get to a couple calls. Let's go to Danny, Long Island. Good morning, Danny. Lead us off. You're on 98.7 ESPN.
Good morning, gang. It's a beautiful Friday. It's going to be another great day. My Nets won. My Islanders blew out the Boston Bruins in the third period. The coffee tastes great. The air is fresh. And I'd like to thank the Nets for wrapping these games up by halftime so I give my remote control a rest and I can enjoy the Islander game, because I've never seen a team, the Nets, and this is really without their best player, just so easily score. That at halftime they said that they scored 60 points at one point in 17 minutes of basketball, which is just unbelievable. But then the Islanders, Dave, I'm so glad you're a Rangers fan. How's your team doing? Everything good?
You know what, Danny? Why? Why do you need to
do this? Because it's a rivalry.
Why do you need to be that guy? You know what? Yankees. You can't. See, this is why you're a bad guy. You can't just come on. My Nets are great. My Islanders are great. I'm loving life. The coffee tastes delicious. You got to do that, and you have to add insult to injury and make me feel bad about things.
Oh, yes, because it's a rivalry. It's an in-town rivalry. It's what it's all about. Trash talking.
This is what it's all about, huh?
You would do the same to me, Dave.
He's not mentally strong enough. He's the Kyrie of the show. He's the Kyrie of the show. He's too sensitive.
He's a bad guy. You know, when I launch my hockey show next weekend, we'll probably get into that kind of stuff, I'd imagine.
It's an embarrassment. I mean, it's an embarrassment. I made phone calls yesterday.
Yeah?
My agent was like, please don't quit. Don't quit. They made a mistake. They understand that.
I don't think they made a mistake. Chris, I don't know if you heard. We're launching a hockey show next Saturday morning, a 10-week run, and I'm going to be hosting the show.
They're going to name it The Marginal Fan, hosted by Dave Rothenberg.
No. I think it's called Real Talent with Dave Rothenberg.
Yeah, Real Talent.
I think they're concerned about
that
you.
That knows nothing about the sport.
A solo host. I think that, you know, if you had someone to babysit you, they'd feel more comfortable, but you flying solo like free range Rick, I don't think they're comfortable with that.
See,
hey,
I think that's the best
you.
Rick.
You're a loser.
Yeah, I love free range Rick. I want more of bonanza. Free range Rick.
Nah, I don't see it like that. And
why do I have to host by myself?
Wow. At the station, don't see it like that either.
Well, why would I have to host by myself? It needs to be a solo show. It can't be. I mean, we do a show together anyway.
What's it, now? You want to incorporate both of us? So then, why don't you come along and host my show with me?
Because I wasn't asked to do it.
Well, I'm asking you now.
No, you're asking me now because we're friends. No, it would have to come from up top, and then I would say no.
You're very sensitive.
Very. How would you not be sensitive? If we were launching a new gambling show. And
we have a gambling show. I'm not involved at all.
That's a
well,
fair
because
point.
Because you want it because that's it's your own show.
Point, Dave.
You can't be trusted. We don't want
we
to
launch
the
new gambling show.
Place.
They didn't even think of discussing it with me.
Well, that's against your rehab to put you in a gambling show. That was a bad example.
Mm. You let him go to Vegas, we definitely not going to see him.
Yes, that's true.
What if they did? Okay, here's a better one. If they did an hour show every Sunday morning on how to deal with vendors, and they had me hosting it, and they didn't even consult you,
that
would aggravate you.
I'm great with vendors.
Strange. Or like, hey, you know, this hour on the new Dave Rothenberg show would be is, you know, how to take your temperature rectally.
I am the thermometer boy right now. See, and this is probably their concerns, that you could go in any direction and really lose your composure and have a nervous breakdown on the air. My name is Dave, and I had my temperature taken rectally as a child. I'm glad that this is still getting conversation.
I still can't believe you admitted
early risers will get work. That might be my favorite soundbite right now. I became so flummoxed. I don't know what happened yesterday. We had Frank Isola, Chris, and he made this point about, you know, if you're a former athlete and you're willing to wake up early to do your show, you're ahead of the curve already, because a lot of athletes aren't willing to do that. And my response was this. Early risers will get work. Yeah.
Early risers will get work.
And I thought maybe it would go away, but of course they repurposed it.
That's going to live in infamy for a while, Dave.
Good. All right. All I know is the gloves are off. So as soon as you guys have your slip-ups, they're going to be brought to the attention of the station immediately.
I was being told by Hurls yesterday that a lot of colleges have actually reached out to do some public speaking, some motivational speaking.
Early risers will get work. You think Frank Isola, upon hearing that as he was a guest, was like, what am I doing here? Why am I on this show?
Oh, my God.
This guy doesn't even have command of the English language. What is happening here right now?
Early risers will get
work.
It's
the first thing you said to him, too.
Well, because he made such a good point, and I wanted to kind of piggyback off of it, and I you've never had that happen? It takes you an hour to do a read. So I'm doing live radio, and I have a misstep. It happens.
Eligibility restrictions do apply.
Did you just blank, Dave? Dave, did you just blank out? Like, did you have somewhere you wanted to go?
I wanted to kind of piggyback on what he was saying, because he's like, if you're willing to wake up early, and I was like, yeah, there you go. And I want to get involved with what's the quote, like the early bird gets the worm. Yeah. I wanted to go there, and I was like early, and then I forgot what the quote was. I was like early, and then then that happened. Early risers will get work. It's so bad, it's good. I need definite help. It's so bad,
that is
it's good.
That is good.
Oh, God. All right, let's turn our attention. So Kuiper has his... All right, enough now from you, please. Kuiper has his new mock draft out, which is great. I got to tell you. Now, he's got Trevor Lawrence going one. We know that. And as we've said a million times, and this is the first time, by the way, he's had trades involved in his mock draft. He has the Jets trading from 2 to 4. And with the 4th overall selection... I'm questioning whether I'd like the Giants to take this guy at 11 if he was there. If you're the Jets and you take Kyle Pitts at 4, I don't know. I don't think I would love that if I was the Jets, if I was a Jets fan.
Well, I mean, let's just start with, I don't know if I love not taking a quarterback. I mean, let's start with that.
That's the big takeaway, right? You're going to not take a quarterback. You're sticking with Darnold. You're moving down. You're taking a tight end out of Florida, Kyle Pitts.
Yeah, and his reasoning, I mean, I was watching Canty on the show yesterday. I mean, Mel's reasoning is that it's Kyle Pitts, and then there's no one even close at that position. And the tight end position for the Jets has been an albatross. Like, they don't get any production from the tight end.
And I get that, Rico, but do you have to take a tight end in the top 5?
4?
Do you have to do that?
Highest ever.
You know what? I go back to when Dave Rothenberg was talking with our very own Anita Marks. He was saying he didn't care if he was Hercules. He's not taking a tight end at that time, O.J. Howard.
I never would. And you know what? It's a perfect example. Who was the guy who was supposed to be the greatest tight end athletically you've ever seen in your life? O.J. Howard. Yeah. Has he lived up to that?
No. And that's what I'm saying. I just feel like you can find tight ends on down the line. Like his pro comp, Kyle Pitts that being, is Travis Kelce. But Travis Kelce wasn't a top 5 pick. He wasn't a top 10 pick. I mean, I don't understand why we have to vault this guy into that territory. And then beyond that, Dave, the fact that you would pass on the opportunity to take a quarterback, like, that makes no sense to me at all.
That feels like, Rick, that's the elephant in the room. I mean, he has the Jets, and a lot of people feel like this, and it feels to be getting some groundswell of support right now. He has the Jets not taking a quarterback with the 2nd overall selection, and I mean, I'll say it until I'm blue in the face. That terrifies me.
Well, I think it terrifies everybody because you just don't know. And I mean, I think the other thing, too, is, and we've said this a couple different times, I mean, Joe Douglas has to make a decision moving forward because, I mean, with how important this offseason is for the franchise with the amount of draft picks and everything else, is do you want to move forward with Sam Darnold, who you didn't draft, that you're going to have to pay soon, or do you and the coaching staff want to draft your own guy? Here's what I don't understand, though, Dave, and you guys are going to have to explain this to me. And maybe this is just Mel sticking to his guns because of how we had, you know, Sam Darnold rated going into the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And he thinks the Jets are just a dumpster fire and they've ruined it. But he actually makes a point in this mock draft that he decided to include trades because the quarterback class is too good. Well, how is the quarterback class too good if you would have had Sam Darnold and Daniel Jones ranked ahead of everyone outside of Trevor Lawrence? And we've seen what those two look like at this level. Does that make any sense?
It doesn't make any sense to me, Rico. Doesn't make any sense at all. And here's the one thing that I think everybody is just kind of glossing over. Like, the idea of resetting the money at the position, like, I just don't think that that's a small thing. Like, you're talking about having to make a decision on Sam Darnold's fifth-year option this offseason. Why would you want to commit $30 million in cash over the next two seasons to a quarterback that you don't know can do the job? I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me. And we've all said this till we're blue in the face. The most valuable commodity in the NFL is a starting quarterback on a rookie deal.
And you have the option of getting that.
And you have the opportunity to have that.
Anyone you want outside of Trevor Lawrence. Now, Rick, you mentioned something. This is not their quarterback. But you know what? If you don't take a quarterback or trade for a quarterback, he now is. It goes from another regime drafted him and believed in him. And up to this point, we may or may not. But once you move forward with Sam Darnold, you'd now believe in him. And he now is the quarterback. So there's no more, well, this is someone else's problem that we got, you know, left holding the bag. That's not your guy if you continue along with him and bypass a quarterback number two overall.
No, I don't disagree. I don't think you can just, you know, keep kicking this down the line. Like, if you decide Sam Darnold's your guy moving forward and he stinks next year, and then all these people are like, oh, then you just address the quarterback position now. Well, with who? Tell me. Because next year's draft ain't that good with quarterbacks. And who are you getting? You're just going to sign a bridge guy till you find who the next quarterback is when you just have the second overall pick in a draft that's supposed to be flush with the with a draft where you're going to have five quarterbacks go potentially in the top 10? You're going to make that decision?
But here's the thing I don't get. And Rick, you're absolutely right with what you're saying, but here's the thing I don't get. Like, I understand that Sam Darnold had a high grade coming out in 2018, but I don't understand how we can have so much conviction on Sam based on what we've seen from him in his first 3 years in the NFL. You're talking about a guy that has more turnovers than passing touchdowns. Like, what is giving you this conviction that he's somehow, some way going to find more consistency, both in terms of his production, but also with his availability? Like, what are you basing that on?
I don't know. I think it's just the fact that he was good in college. And that he was
great
as well.
Yeah, but he had the same issues in college, though. But he had the exact same issues in college.
Yeah. But he's been, I mean, let's be honest. If he wasn't the what was he, third overall pick in the draft?
Mm-hmm.
Would he even be starting in the NFL?
Probably not.
So I don't know. I shake my head at the thought that they're going to move forward with Sam Darnold. And maybe it'll work out, but it's certainly not.
Well, here's the thing, Dave. You don't have a lot of benefit of the doubt going into this situation.
No.
If you run it back with Sam, people are expecting you to compete this year.
And you'll get crushed. If you run it back with Sam and he's not good or he's hurt or his first 3 years are more of what he's going to be moving forward, Joe Douglas will get crushed. And you know what? Rightfully so. This is the biggest decision this is probably the biggest decision he'll ever make with the Jets. Right here, right now.
Well, this offseason in general, yeah.
Huge, huge. All right.
If I was Joe Douglas, it's such an uncomfortable situation with Sam Darnold or with one of these rookie quarterbacks. To me, this would just push me closer to where Rick's position has been the entire time. Whatever you got to give up to get Deshaun Watson, that's what you do.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I have nothing left.
Hear more of DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.